Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Black Eagle Podcast, episode 5. Here, in episode 5 and in episode 6, we're going to break the format, tear the whole thing down. But just for 2 episodes, fear not, Black Eagles podcast fans. Things will return to normal as soon as we finish these 2 episodes. Khan and I will be doing our usual lively, fun chatting about everything Beşiktaş. But for the time being, it's just me, Sinan Schwording, live from New York. Khan is out on assignment. We've got him out working the angles. I don't have my journalism expressions down, really. We've got him taking down names. Whatever. Khan is actually, we've got some interviews for you. So, for these 2 episodes, alright, what we got here is we're doing a deep dive into the World Cup. But this is a Black Eagles podcast. This is a Beşiktaş podcast. So, of course, we're going to be using a special custom-made Beşiktaş lens through which to view this World Cup. Presented, of course, by myself and Mr. Khan Bayazit. And for these features, we've got Khan out there interviewing some experts in the field, who are going to give you some good background information and help prepare you for this upcoming World Cup, get you excited about it, get you pumped for it. A reminder, the World Cup is starting on this coming Thursday, June 14th, 11 a.m. New York Eastern Standard Time. So that's, I'm going to guess, what is that, like 5 p.m. for most of you in Western Europe or thereabouts. But yeah, the first match of the World Cup is, of course, going to be between the hosts, Russia and Saudi Arabia. You know, interesting match geopolitically in terms of, you know, that's a dated rival on the geopolitical map. 2 oil powers going at it in the World Cup. But yeah, in preparing you for that exciting World Cup extravaganza, let's think about how this is all going to relate to Beşiktaş. As you all know, we don't have many players featured in this World Cup. In large part, this is because, of course, the Turkish national team has not made it. Not the craziest thing. The team is in some kind of rehabilitation at this point. Mircea Lucescu has taken the reins and is experimenting with a lot of younger guys now. And, you know, they're finding some young core that might get this national team into future tournaments. But for now, there is no Turkish national team, and therefore, you know, of course, much less Beşiktaş-related news in this one. But we do have some guys in there, and some very key Beşiktaş figures. First and foremost, on the Portuguese national side, right? We've got Pepe and Quaresma. And on the Croatian side, we also had 2 guys, although one did not make the final cut. Matej Mitrovic. Khan can get back here to making fun of my Americanized pronunciation when he does get back, but until then I have free rein to butcher all names and whatnot, I suppose. But so yes, Matej Mitrovic has not made the final cut for Croatia's World Cup side. So that's unfortunate for us who might have wanted to see what he could offer. He is returning to Beşiktaş. His extension, the buyout clause, was not signed by Club Bruges in Belgium. And so he is going to be returning to Beşiktaş. So it could have been nice to see if he's picked up some new skills while on the road. And to see if he could be, you know, offering us something of interest in the coming season. But anyway, what we do have with the Croatian side is Domagoj Vida, who is also likely to be actually a fairly important fixture in the coming World Cup. So that's something for us to watch for sure. He's also going to be a linchpin in Besiktas' defense alongside Pepe for at least the coming year, if not for years to come. So we should use this opportunity to get to know him a little better, I suppose. We did see him somewhat sparingly in the second half of our season, of our last season. But anyway, basically, today, in our first preview episode, we're going to be looking at the Portuguese national side. And Khan has booked a very knowledgeable expert on Portuguese football in the way of Jan Hagen. He's a Norwegian-based Portuguese football expert. And so we're going to get to that. And then after that, Khan and I did actually record a brief conversation we had about the Turkish national team side and the friendlies they've just completed. And in doing so, we look not only at the Besiktas' players on the squad, which in this case was actually only Ozan, but also some of the guys that Besiktas is linked to in the transfer window that we're possibly going to be looking to bring in this summer. And so there's some interesting insight there for those more focused on the actual Besiktas squad itself and who can't be bothered with all this national team World Cup nonsense. So for those of you who are really in it, you know, the diehard Besiktas fans, stick around for after the Portuguese expert interview, Jan Hagen's interview. Yeah, we will have something of a more typical Black Eagles podcast segment at that point. But without further ado, here is the interview that Khan Bayazit conducted with Jan Hagen.
Okay then, shall we just get going?
Yeah, for sure.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Black Eagles podcast. We're going to be previewing the World Cup in today's episode. And in particular, we are going to have a talk with Jan Hagen, who is an expert on Portuguese football and the Portuguese national team. Jan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So Jan, you're based in Norway, but you follow Portuguese football on the foot, really. You're also on Twitter. I've been following you personally for a few years, I think. I can highly recommend for anyone who's interested in Portuguese football to give you a follow. I believe it's at Portuball on
yeah,
Twitter.
That's
is that
perfect.
Correct? Right. Okay, so definitely advise everyone to follow you, and I'll give you a chance to plug whatever else there is for you to plug at the end of the broadcast. But let's get to the meat and potatoes of the things here. What I really wanted to talk to you about was what are your expectations of Portugal at the World Cup?
Well, they are reigning European champions, so there is natural. There are some that expect Portugal to do well, but the general expectations among the Portuguese is that the Portuguese people are mostly of the humble kind, so they are not bragging around or having this high expectations of themselves and their national team. And so is also the case with this World Championship. Going into this, going into the World Cup this summer, there is natural that they obviously want to surpass their group. They are facing Morocco, Iran, and of course Spain, which will be their opening game. They want to surpass that group, but they are far from underestimating their opponents. And the main topic among the players and the manager is that first we get out of the group, and then we'll take take it game by game, a bit like they did at the Euro. So not very high expectations, just this, yeah, realistic approach to the whole thing.
And you alluded to the Euros there. How surprised were you that Portugal went all the way at Euro 2016?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a great, great surprise. I didn't expect them to do that at all. But Fernando Santos, who came in after the horrible 2014 World Cup, where Portugal went face out in the group stage, he really brought this defensively solidity. There was this huge improvement defensively, which have seen Portugal play quite not so well, would some say, not so entertaining. But, you know, the man gets results, and he really showed that at the Euros. I think Portugal won one game within the 19 minutes during those seven games of the Euros, but they still managed to clinch the title in the end. And for that, Fernando Santos is forever a hero in Portugal. And yeah, it was just a huge surprise to anyone, I think. Although Fernando Santos actually said in January 2016 that Portugal were going to play in that final in France that year. So I don't know if he could predict the future or not, but it was a good call for sure.
Well, of course, Emil, when you're talking about them playing a more defensive game, they tried in 2004 in Portugal to play attractive football, and they got beaten by Greece, which I remember watching that whole campaign, really. Greece were, that was a once-in-a-lifetime thing, I think. And I think everyone and their mothers was kind of hoping that Portugal would win it, because they had been one of the better sides in that tournament and they were playing positive football. But it's kind of ironic in a way that 12 years later, they themselves do something a little less, not so Portuguese, and play more on a defensive style, and not so much focusing on playing attractive football. But I very much enjoyed Portugal. It was so fun watching them scrape by in the groups and just barely get out, but then going on and winning the entire thing. And how important do you think that Pepe was in? Of course, Pepe, not currently a Beşiktaş player. How important was he for you for Portugal's success 2 years ago?
He was absolutely fundamental. He was the backbone of that European Championship win. He was, I would say, the team's most important player, probably alongside Rui Patricio, the Sporting goalkeeper. Who is now going to Napoli, by the way. But he was absolutely fantastic throughout the whole tournament. And Portugal will be relying on him yet again this summer. And hopefully he can bring that form he showed 2 years ago to Russia. Because at the moment, Portugal do not have the best centre-backs. They have Bruno Alves, they have José Font, and Pepe, of course, but they are like 36, 35, and 34 years old, so yeah. It's quite an old trio. But Pepe was fantastic in that European Championship, and I just hope he can do something similar this year. He was really good at the Confederations Cup last summer as well. So there's no sign that he's going to become any worse of a player anytime soon. And that's a great thing for Portugal, and probably a great thing for Beşiktaş as well.
Well, he was instrumental in our Champions League campaign for sure. Played fantastic group stage. Obviously, in the matches against Bayern Munich, Having his partner sent off after 17, 18 minutes, that didn't really help. But he was fantastic for Beşiktaş this season. I do see him continuing his form. He had a little bit of injuries towards the end of the season, but I think that he didn't really want to risk making it any worse, and he didn't want to sacrifice his World Cup, which I completely understand. So how do you see Pepe's future beyond the World Cup? Do you think that with the fact that Portugal don't really have a lot of young, talented center backs in the pipeline, do you think that Pepe will play another big tournament for Portugal at age 36?
Yeah, that's a good point. Portugal are really struggling to produce really good center backs these days. They have Ruben Dias, who played his first national team game on Monday, it was, against Tunisia. He had a good game in partnership with Pepe, but I think Portugal will be hoping José Font and Bruno Alves retire before Pepe, because he is by far their best player in that position. And I don't know, Portugal maybe need another 2 or 3 years before there are any players who can really replace him and his position in the national team. So I surely hope he will stay for another 2 years, and I think he will do it as well. As I said, there is no sign of him slowing down. So I hope he can. I hope Portugal can get another 2 years out of him.
Yeah, for sure. And as for Bruno Alves, of course, we saw him in Turkey as well. He played for Fenerbahce for a while. And he really, in his prime, Bruno Alves was a beast. You know, when he was playing for Zenit, he was a fantastic, phenomenal defender. And you still saw glimpses of that when he was playing at Fenerbahce. But I think you could tell that he was physically not what he once used to be. And now he's playing for Glasgow Rangers, I believe. And I think that he hasn't aged as well as perhaps Pepe has, but of course he's a little bit older as well. And with Fonte, I think that's not that he never was like that level of a defender. I see, to me, perception wise, Bruno Alves used to be a really, really good defender in his heyday, and Fonte was always kind of like I hope I'm not completely butchering the pronunciation there, but. He was never a top echelon defender, and I think that's maybe for the future of Portugal. If you have a good young defender, like you just said, with what was his name, Bruno Dias?
Ruben Dias.
Yes. I think playing alongside with someone like Pepe could do wonders for him, and he could, of course, grow out into the next Bruno Alves or next Pepe or whatever. Okay, but I'm going to speak to you about something else. So Ricardo Quaresma, of course, his role for Portugal has been less prominent in years past. Pepe has, of course, always kind of been the rock at the back for Portugal. But Ricardo Quaresma, this is, his first ever World Cup at age 34. Does that surprise you that he makes the squad now, whereas 4 years ago, 8 years ago, he didn't?
Well, first of all, I really hoped and thought he was going to go to that World Cup in Brazil. He deserved it. He had been so, so good prior to that World Cup, but the manager at the time, Paulo Bento, he really liked to mix up his squad, so there was barely any newcomers who was allowed, and we all saw how that turned out. But I'm not surprised to see Ricardo Quaresma in this squad. He has really grown to be a central part of this national team group, not only on the pitch, but also as one of the more experienced players. He has really helped the younger ones, and yeah, he's really turned up whenever Portugal have needed it, and especially from the bench where he has where he is this super sub for Portugal. He has produced several goals and especially assist when coming off the bench in games when Portugal have been struggling. So at the World Cup, I think he will be not a particular starter, but he will for sure be someone Fernando Santos will bring on whenever Portugal need a goal. So he's really grown into an important part of this Portugal team.
And you already kind of answered my next question there, because I was going to ask you, what do you think his role was going to be? But personally, I was very surprised by how big of a role he actually did end up getting at the Euros, because obviously in the group stages, Luis Nani kind of stole the show a little bit with his goals, but he kind of dissipated a little bit as the tournament went on. Quaresma stepped up and you know, he was important for Portugal. I believe he scored that. Was it the winner against Croatia? In
yeah,
time?
That's correct. Yeah, in extra time.
And
yeah.
Then he scored, I believe, the winning penalty against Poland, if
that's
I'm not
also
mistaken.
Correct. Yep.
So, and of course, and in the final where Cristiano Ronaldo had to be substituted off early on due to an injury, it was really quite telling. excuse me, quite telling for Portugal's situation right now, in the sense that they finally had a, for the, you know, criticism wise, the criticism on Portugal is always, oh, it's just a one man team. And I think it was quite a poetic justice that Portugal won that final on the backbone, on the basically based on the backbone of their team, not Cristiano Ronaldo who stole the show, but it was a team effort. And I believe it was Eder who scored the winner. And who would have expected that, that Eder would have scored the winning goal? I mean, it's a position where Portugal have always had issues in the past few years, you know, finding a real good center forward. Do you think that that Portugal have a good one now with André Silva? Or sorry, not André Silva. Am I right?
That's
André
correct.
Silva, right. Do you think that he's ready to lead the line there?
He has had an amazing goal scoring record with Portugal since he made his debut after the Euros. He won't be leading the line alone, though, but because he will have Cristiano Ronaldo beside him up front. So a lot of the pressure will be put on Cristiano, and he loves that kind of pressure. So, but André Silva, he has really found this great partnership with Cristiano. So they as a duo have, I think they scored something like 70% of Portugal's goals in the qualifier, and they scored quite a lot of goals. So he has really found his foot at the national team, and he has. Although he has had a disappointing season with AC Milan, he really is someone the Portuguese fans are having big hopes for, because he showed such great form with Porto before joining AC Milan last summer, and he's really managed to step out of Cristiano's shadow for a little bit and actually performed quite well in that in a duo up front with Cristiano.
Hey, maybe he should come to Besiktas, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I would like to see that, because things haven't really gone his way at Milan, and he hasn't really gotten that many chances. So Turkey, I would be for that. I would for sure be behind that.
Well, if you see how Vincent Aboubakar improved his game and how Anderson Talisca has improved his game at Besiktas, I think it's a pretty good environment for a player to revitalize their careers. I mean, if you look at Mario Gomez, he was in Fiorentina, he was stuck in a rut, came to Besiktas, made the German national team again, was doing really well at the World Cup, but no, sorry, at the Euros, was doing really well at the Euros until he got injured. So Bisic really have had a really positive effect on many players that might have gotten sidetracked a little bit at club level, because I believe, you know, before this season, Vincent Aboubakar at Porto was kind of viewed as a joke a little bit, kind of the same way that you described Moussa Marega. When you were in the podcast I listened to you last week, you were describing how he was viewed, Moussa Marega, I mean, by the Porto fans. And I recognized a lot of that, that Vincent Aboubakar was kind of in the same position, really, and kind of getting ridiculed at times. Because I have a lot of friends who are Porto fans, of course. Over the years, I've gotten to know some people because we have a huge thing in common, which is Ricardo Quaresma.
And Pepe.
Yeah, and Pepe, yes, very true. And Hugo Almeida.
So yeah, that was the golden years.
Yeah, exactly. But it was funny to me how similar the descriptions I used to get from Aboubakar when we first loaned him, and when I asked them for some information about him, the way they described Aboubakar was almost exactly the same as you described their feelings about Moussa Marega before this season. That's quite funny to me.
Yeah, he was kind of looked at as like Marega as a scapegoat of Porto, or the reason behind, not the main reason, but one of the reasons behind Porto not lifting titles anymore. He had missed some big opportunities, and yeah, he started well after joining from Lorient, but towards the end of the season, he has really missed so many chances that the Porto fans barely could stand the sight of him. So, but his year at Besiktas really helped him, and Porto are really bearing the fruits of that now. He was like his first season, he started well, and again, towards the end, Porto was more had to rely more on Tiquinho Soares and Moussa Marega. But overall, he had a good season, and he really carried the goal scoring duties for Porto at the start of the season, and was very important in that first half. I think he struggled a bit with injuries towards the end this year.
Yeah,
I think he said something like he played 2 months injured, just to, because Porto had injury problems up front. So I would really congratulate Bob Besiktas and Aboubakar on revitalizing his career and for finding his form and confidence back.
I think the main thing for him was really confidence, because he kind of started the season with us the same way as he had ended it with Porto, with missing a lot of good chances. But he just came into a groove at some point and started scoring goals. And of course, they won the African Cup of Nations as well. I think that gave him a huge boost. And which is kind of funny to me as well, is that always in the Champions League, he seems to not... he seems not to be all that impressed by all the pressure, whereas I think domestically he suffers from it a little bit more, the expectations and all that. Whereas in the Champions League, he does, yeah, maybe he just turns off a switch and just goes, well, this is the Champions League. If I miss, I miss.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, he wasn't this, he didn't do outstandingly in the Champions League this year, but he scored a couple of goals, and yeah, so but as you said, I think the main thing for him was just getting that confidence back, and yeah, it's nice to see him smiling again, because there was not a lot of smiling towards the end of his first period at Porto before he joined Besiktas. So yeah, it's nice to see, and him and Marega is just this, and Hector Herrera, of course, the Mexican midfielder, they are like the big symbols of this Porto title, because they were all written off, they were all mocked, they were all
even
scapegoats.
Brahimi, I think.
Yeah, at some point, even him was labeled as someone who was a bit toxic to the group or the environment around the team. So It was. I'm no Porto fan, or I'm not a fan of any of the teams in Portugal. I just follow the league and love the league. But it was nice to see some of those players getting rewarded for their hard work. So yeah, it was nice to see.
And Sergio Conceição, of course, with a phenomenal performance in his first season at Porto, and surely he is destined to be Portugal's head coach at some point.
Yeah, perhaps. I think he wants to explore his club options first, but at some point I hope to see him as a national team manager because he has this great tactical knowledge. He often switched between the 4-3-3 and the 4-4-2, a very attacking 4-4-2 with Porto this season. And yeah, he really managed his squad really well. And at the end, it really paid off. So a huge, huge and impressive title for him to clinch in his first season as Porto manager with the squad that that really was just inherited from Nuno Espírito Santo from last season, when Porto didn't stood a chance at all in the Primeira Liga. But this year, with the same squad, he didn't buy anyone last summer. He just received Vincent Abubakar and Ricardo Pereira back from loan. And they really did really well. So, but what he managed to do with Porto this season was really, really impressive. If he becomes Portugal manager someday, based on this season and what he has done with Braga, Académica, and even Nantes in Liga, I would be very happy with that. But first, I want to see him, maybe go to an even bigger club than Porto, and hopefully he can perform there as well.
Yeah, it's probably unlikely that someone who is still as young as Sergio Conceição and as passionate as he is, because I had the pleasure of watching him play in Belgium for Standard, and he is a really special personality, and I think he probably wouldn't be able to sit around for months on end waiting until there's a national team break for him to get to work with some players. He's probably a little bit too young for that still.
That's a good point. Yeah, he's hugely passionate, and that's one of the great things about him. His incredible passion. I saw that early on. He was managing some of the minor clubs in Portugal as well. He's always had this incredible passion, and it's fun. And I think the players really turns them on like before the game. So I don't think anyone wants to disappoint Sergio Conceição, because he seems like he's just so passionate. I couldn't bear the thought of disappointing him.
But the great thing about a coach like that is he has a passion and ability to motivate his players, which, for example, in Turkey, Fatih Terim is notorious for his ability to motivate players. But he's also known not to be the sharpest knife in the drawer when it comes to tactics. And then when you say Sergio Conceição is a great tactician, that's a cocktail for a fantastic coach. Plus, contrary to, for example, an Antonio Conte, who you could say he's a great tactician, he's a very passionate coach, but he's more of a defensive-minded coach. And the same thing could be said for Jose Mourinho. It's great that we see this now with a guy like Sergio Conceição, who likes to play more attacking football, because mostly those guys who do have that reputation, good tactician, very passionate, look at Diego Simeone, they're all kind of more defensive minded. So Sergio Conceição kind of looks like the perfect coach for a really big club in England, or maybe in Spain, or who knows.
Yeah, he did break some scoring records in with Porto this season, so definitely, there is something there. But first of all, I think he has this, not 100% the same view as Jose Mourinho, but he's still a he's a pragmatic person.
Pragmatist.
Who first of all, wants to get results. But the way he did it with Porto this season was really impressive. And as you said, he did it while playing attacking football. So it has been a pleasure to watch both him and Porto this year. And hopefully Porto, he just signed a new deal. So Porto will probably have him for another season. And well, they've sold Ricardo Pereira, but if they can keep most of the other players, I think Porto stand a good chance ahead of the next season as well.
Definitely, and hopefully a good performance in the Champions League as well for them, because Portuguese football definitely can use it after Benfica's slip last season.
That was awful to watch.
I couldn't believe it, because the year before we played them, of course, in the group stages, and they gave us a real good run for our money, and they ended above Besiktas, and I was surprised to see. But of course, you know, they missed Jonas for pretty much the entire campaign, and he's so important for them. And then, of course, they sold off Ederson, Lindelof, a bunch of starters. So I guess they didn't really replace them with players that were ready yet.
That was an awful summer for Benfica. As you said, they lost so many key players, and they didn't bother to replace them properly. Or, like, they signed Douglas from Barcelona, who's like third or fourth option on their fullback. That's not someone who should go in and replace Nelson Semedo, who was such an important player. And
he scored an amazing goal against Besiktas.
That's right. Yeah, Nelson Semedo. They in that game where Benfica were leading 3-0, and then Besiktas came back. Yeah, and I had to say, when I watched that game before the game, there was this marking, I think, of the fans for deaf people, I think, or deaf people.
Yeah, there was a campaign before the match or something for deaf people. That's true. Yeah.
And then they were very silent in the start of the match. And when they turned on, I've never heard anything like that before or since. That was the fans was absolutely amazing when they started to cheer for the team. So the Besiktas fans, that they have really impressed me before, but when they really broke that silence, that was something I've never heard before. So that was really, really incredible.
Well, Jan, maybe you should come to Besiktas.
Yep, perhaps.
Okay, so let's go back a little bit full circle. I just wanted to talk to you about one more thing, and it's just a little bit more about Ricardo Quaresma. You kind of alluded to it already, that his role will probably be similar to the Euros, where he will probably start most of the matches on the bench. My question is then for you, with Cristiano Ronaldo on the left and Andre Silva probably on top, who do you think will start at the right over Quaresma?
There is plenty of option you have, but I think that Bernardo Silva will be given the at the World Cup. And I think Portugal plays with this 4-4-2 formation, where Cristiano will start up front with Andre Silva, and then there will be then they will have someone like João Mário on the left, Bernardo Silva on the right. But they also have other options from the bench, such as Gelson Martins from Sporting and Gonzalo Guedes who had a really good season with Valencia. So there is plenty of options, but Quaresma will be a very important part of this Portugal squad. And as I said, coming off that bench, he has been really, really important. So I expect him, at least in the group stage, start most of the games on the bench and come off and probably make a difference, because that's what it does. But if Portugal make it far, we are bound to see him starting two or three games, because we need fresh legs. Or Portugal need fresh legs, and yeah, Kuresma, yeah, he will still be an important part of Portugal's campaign.
And that's something that I find very impressive with Portugal, is they have a lot of players that are well over 30 years old, like Quaresma, like Ronaldo, like Pepe. But those guys all seem to be in absolutely phenomenal fitness. Their physical condition is still really, really, really good. And you often see with players that, you know, once they start hitting 32, 33, they start deteriorating. But these guys are really taking good care of their bodies, it seems.
Yeah, you can see the guys you mentioned, that they like to hit the gym. So no worries with their fitness, that's for sure.
Okay, if you have time for one more question, I would like to...
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so I'd like to ask you about a former Beşiktaş player who has been, maybe to some kind of a surprise, but really if you've been following him in Russia, probably not a surprise, although the competition in his position is great. Manuel Fernandes, of course, called up for Portugal. This is the first time in a long time I can recall him getting a call up and being in the final squad, I believe, for the World Cup as well, in a position where Portugal do have a lot of talent, the central midfield area. Do you think Manuel Fernandes will get a chance at the World Cup?
Yeah, he's... Well, that's what I like so much about Fernando Santos, besides that he brought the European Championship back to the country. Because he doesn't pick his players solely on what they've done for the national team before, or their merit, or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
He chose his players often based on form. And that's where Manuel Fernandes has been absolutely outstanding this season for Lokomotiv Moscow. He came in against Tunisia in this friendly. Portugal played on Monday, and he did okay. But I can see him fit in. He's this player who can fit in almost any role in the midfield. And as Portugal play with a quite narrow wings, he could also suit in like João Mário. On either of the flanks as well. So, but first and foremost, I think Fernando Santos brought him as a backup for William Carvalho, because he left out Ruben Neves, and that was quite a big deal, because he has had a great season with Wolverhampton, and he was really the only player who really would substitute William Carvalho without any problems, because they have the same roles in their club teams. But Manuel Fernandes will, I'm sure we will see him play, and I think he will first and foremost be a backup option to William Carvalho in that defensive central midfield.
Okay, Jan, thank you so much for answering all my questions and talking some football. It was a great conversation, and I realize we kind of went off topic from time to time, but I just find it so fascinating, and Portugal and Portuguese football is something that I'm quite fond of, actually. And I started following Portuguese football since Mario Jardel back in the late 90s. So it's something I've always kept a little bit of tabs on. So for me, very fascinating. And your knowledge of Portuguese football is phenomenal. And I have to say, for someone, did you learn Portuguese over time? Because it's absolutely amazing how you managed to... follow and report on Portuguese football so accurately, and it's great to have someone who does it really well in English.
Yeah, thank you for all the kind words. I've studied Portuguese for 2-3 years now, so I'm not a fluent speaker, but it's the language I at least try to understand and learn. So, but yeah, it's it has been quite the ride following Portuguese football. When I first started 6-7 years ago, I didn't understand anything, but now I, at least when I'm reading and hearing, I could understand most. So yeah, it's been quite fun, and I've really enjoyed chatting with you as well. It has been we have had fun for sure.
Okay, Jan, do you want to plug anything before we end this?
Nah, it's okay. You can follow me at PortuBall on Twitter if you like. Some daily news, opinions, and stats on all things Portuguese football. But if you don't, that's fine as well.
Definitely give Jan a follow. You know, if you have any questions about Portuguese football, don't be afraid to just reach out to him. He interacts with a lot of people, which is also something I always find great about people on Twitter who actually take the time to interact with their followers, especially because you have a lot of followers, so you probably get a lot of questions. It's not always easy to then interact with people because you'll probably miss some stuff. But definitely give him a follow on Twitter. Yeah, thank you again, Jan, for being my guest today, and hope to have you on again soon.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you as well.
Yes. Yeah, great. Great, very insightful interview, Jan. You offered a lot of great input, lots of great info for us to consider in how we view the Portuguese national team going into this World Cup. Thank you again to Jan Hagen for coming on the show. Thank you, Khan, for booking him and organizing that whole affair. That was fantastic. Anyway, as promised, the pre-recorded conversation Khan and I had about the Turkish national team, their recently concluded friendlies where they played, let me get my thinking cap on here, where they played Iran victoriously, Tunisia in a draw, and Russia also in a draw. And so, yeah, let me just cut straight into that. It's a little bonus for you real diehard Beşiktaş fans who just can't go an episode without something specifically related to what's happening with the squad and the transfer rumors and all that's building up in this coming summer. Here we go. So my last little bit is just to sort of very quickly recap what happened with the national team. And there's really not much news for Beşiktaş fans. As far as actual Beşiktaş players, Ozan played little bits of the first and second games against Iran and...
Oh, wasn't it Tunisia or Morocco?
Yes, Tunisia, yeah. Which got, stormed by the fans in Switzerland. Anyway, he played little bits of the first game against Iran, the second game against Tunisia. He played the entire second half against Russia. He actually flashed some nice ability late in the game. He should have taken a shot, actually, and he sort of passed it, and it didn't come off. And could have been an assist, but not much there. But the sort of interesting thing, I guess, for Beşiktaş fans, would have been scouting players who have been linked to us. And on the national team, there's Emre Akbaba, who got significant playing time in our first game against Iran, and then a bit in the last game against Russia, and then also Okay Yokuşlu, right, who's been linked to us for some time. Now, how credible are those links before I get into it, Khan?
Well, it kind of started when he was in the Beşiktaş basketball game. I think that really started the rumors and speculation. But I he hasn't really been linked credibly, really. I think that he's probably a little bit too expensive right now for us, if I'm honest.
He might have outpriced us.
I mean, really, not qualifying for the Champions League is just such a big bummer for us.
Yeah,
it really limits us this transfer window.
So do you see him moving to another team in Istanbul, or
no?
Because they can't afford him either, really, right?
He's going abroad probably, I think. I can't see. Galatasaray can't afford him.
And Fener,
I don't know. I mean, you know, if Fener were to qualify for the Champions League because they're in the qualifiers, I think then they would be able to.
I'll sort of speak of him in the hypothetical, but yeah, that might not be so realistic anyway.
It's a player I would really love to see. That's the guy I'd want to be the replacement for Atiba, but I am kind of afraid that it's not really realistic. It's a player I've liked for a very long time.
He would fit. I was going to suggest just that. And so he was a little bit rough around the edges. But he sort of started to fit more seamlessly into the midfield, particularly when Ozan was on the pitch actually with him, which would be intriguing actually. And then in the last game, he, Ozan, and Emre Akpaba played it together. And that's actually when the national team's midfield was probably at its most fluid in terms of pacing and spacing. Shout out to Clyde Frazier, famous Knicks announcer. Anyway, sorry. But yeah, so that would like... What would be interesting, actually, for a Besiktas fan is that if Okai could somehow be fit into the budget, he would be a very apt replacement. What I've deduced from scouting out these guys was that he would be a very apt replacement for Atiba. And Emre Akpaba, in the first game where he started and played most of his minutes, was very hesitant. Looked a little bit outmatched by the level of guys around him, and you can obviously credit that to him playing for Alanya most of his time. And so, to his defense, you could say that he needs to adjust to playing with a higher level of talent. And he showed, particularly again in that last match against Russia, that he could do it. He started to sort of more seamlessly get into the mix there, and I saw some potential for him for sure. But definitely Okai would have been the most exciting of all the guys we could theoretically have been linked to. And so it's unfortunate that maybe that's not still in the works. But yeah, so that's pretty much all I had to really say about the national team. Besides that, Chailar was probably our most impressive. We have no links to him, though, right? He's maybe going to, I think he might be going to Arsenal.
We did before.
Once upon a time, before
he went to Germany, there was some serious talks of him coming to Besiktas, but unfortunately that didn't happen.
He might be a potential Arsenal transfer, I've heard now, too, so that's good for him. And he looks like he's up for it. He really was playing at a very high level for the national team. Besides that, the national team was a train wreck for the most part, and I was very unimpressed. I think they were, to their defense, maybe playing slightly more experimental in terms of the younger players and stuff, but they looked very uncohesive for the most part.
Cenk was good until he got sent off.
Who?
Cenk.
Mm-hmm. He was, but until that unfortunate situation with the Swiss fans.
Yeah, let's not go into it. Okay, that'll...
let's wrap it up. Wow.
Fantastic. There you have it. A little bit more Besiktas input for all of you. Thank you for tuning in, everyone. That's going to do it for us on episode 5 here. As always, thanks for listening to the Black Eagles podcast. Thanks for tuning in, subscribing on iTunes, Google Play. Now, this is episode 5 that's concluded, we should be up on Spotify soon. There's another way for you guys to listen to us and follow us. Of course, our flagship internet presence is Besiktas International, if you don't already know. So as always, please check that out. We're constantly updating that website, putting up news, transfer rumors, only good stuff, only concrete, credible stuff. And of course, we cover most of that here on the podcast as well. But do check out our website. It's Besiktas-International.com. Also, follow us on Twitter at Besiktas_INT. And, of course, you can follow our podcast on Twitter at Eagles_podcast. You can follow myself, Sinan Schwarting, at Sir_Rights_ALOT.
You can follow Khan at Razerian, R-A-Z-Z-E-R-I-A-N, or Z-Z for those of you. Sorry, Khan, you're not here to correct me this time. and of course, finally, do follow our guest on today's episode, Jan Hagen, at Portubal, P-O-R-T-U-B-A-L-L. Ball, that's not very complicated. And as always, yes, thank you for tuning in. Please give us any feedback. If you love us, let us know why. If you're hating, go screw yourself. No, I'm kidding. Do let us know why. Try to be constructive. Try to be polite. You know, we're not looking for fights, right? This, 2018 is complicated enough as it is. Be nice to each other. You know, go do someone who's close to you a favor. Feel better about yourself for the day, if you know, and then come back and decide how you're going to approach hating on our podcast. But however you do go about it, please do not hesitate to let us know what we can do better. Or, you know, if you have something more concrete to give us in terms of feedback, you know, specific segments you'd like to hear us do, or, you know, topics you'd like to hear us talk about, anything. We're open for it. So yeah, as always, thank you all. Our listenership is in fact growing fairly steadily according to the stats. So that would suggest something's going right. And yeah, for those of you who are looking for the usual format, again, fear not, we'll be back with it after the next episode. One more World Cup preview feature episode where we have an interview with an expert on the Croatian national side, Ante, but we'll get to that next time. Fear not, though. The usual format will return after that next episode. And until then, and until our next episode, go Besiktas.